The Montgomery County Hospital District Board of Directors Finance and Budget Committee. Roll call.
Sorry, I was there and then I wasn't there. Robert Hudson. Tanya Peacock.
Here.
Kelly Inman.
Here.
Charles Shirley.
Here.
Jackie Williams here. Jason Walker. Bob Bagley.
Here.
All righty. We'll start out with discussion of the budget for fiscal year 26-27. Mr. Allen?
All right, thank you. Is this microphone working? First of all, I'd just like to thank everyone, managers and staff, for their work in putting the budgets together, the board, your participation in the workshops and input that we received there, and accounting staff who has had to put all this together and create reports and try to point me in the right direction. So I want to thank everyone for their input so far. If you would indulge me, I'd like to read a couple pages and get some things in the record with regard to the budget. I don't normally read to you, but this is just a couple pages. So by special legislation in 1977, the state of Texas authorized the creation, administration, maintenance, operation, and financing of the Montgomery County Hospital District. In January 1978, the voters of Montgomery County approved the creation of the district. According to the enabling legislation, the primary responsibility of the district is to provide health care to indigent residents of the county. However, the scope of the mission is broad. Through the years, Montgomery County Hospital District services have expanded to include a countywide emergency medical service, the 911 communication system, emergency preparedness in coordination with agency partners, and management of public health for the county. MCHD has managed public health since 2010. Public health promotes a healthy, resilient community through health education, disease prevention, clinical services, and public health preparedness. Effective September 30th, 2025, Montgomery County Hospital District was dissolved and its activities were integrated into Public Health District was dissolved and its activities.
We could switch it over and Hospital District would just become Public Health.
Were integrated into Montgomery County Hospital District. Although a part of MCHD, public health will continue to be funded by federal grants, state grants, and a subsidy from Montgomery County, while MCHD will continue to be funded mainly through ad valorem property taxes and revenue generated by provision of EMS to the county. Since the activities and funding sources are different, MCHD and public health are presented as two different funds. Turn to the next page to the budget overview. The general fund. The budget for fiscal year 2027 advances the district's commitment and ability to serve the citizens of Montgomery County by ensuring adequate funding to provide timely and high-quality services next year and in future years. Even though ad valorem property taxes are the district's largest source of revenue, the MCHD board helped taxpayers in FY 2018 by implementing the maximum homestead exemption of 20%. Following the implementation of the homestead exemption, MCHD's tax revenue each year from FY 2018 through FY 2021 was less than the tax revenue generated in FY 2017. FY 2027 is budgeted at a deficit with a proposed tax rate of 4.79 cents per $100 valuation by adjusting the tax rate from 4.73 cents to 4.79 cents per $100 valuation. Tax revenue is budgeted at $55,576,694, which is 5.3% greater than last year's forecasted tax revenue and coincides within the long-standing board guideline of the county's population growth plus inflation. Total expenditures are budgeted to be $99,572,453, which represents a 7.6% decrease compared to fiscal year 2026 forecast. The largest decreases occur in capital and indigent care. The lower capital cost occurs due to fewer capital projects planned in 2027, while the lower indigent care expenses are due to fewer expected unduplicated clients, along with lower medical costs per client. Expenditures are expected to exceed revenue by $3,525,034. Public Health Fund. The essential activities of public health are funded by a Montgomery County subsidy and grants, which combine to provide $1,180,641 for fiscal year 2027. Total budgeted revenue is $1,318,791. Additional grant revenue may be forthcoming for fiscal year 2027, but is premature to budget for it at this time. Currently, total expenditures are budgeted to be $1,576,360. Therefore, expenses are budgeted to exceed revenue by $257,569. We'll go to page 8. So this is the population growth and inflation. And so population growth at 3.995% and inflation at 2.360% combines to 6.355%, which is that guideline that the board directs us. The next page, page 9, is budget assumptions. So tax revenue, adopt a tax rate of 4.79 cents per $100 valuation, which will reflect a 5.3% growth. EMS net revenue, volume increases 3.5% from current year. EMS fee schedule is set at 200% of Medicare allowable, so that represents no change. Public health, Montgomery County funding is $600,000. Grant funding is reimbursed based on allowed expenses per the Texas Department of State Health Services. Expenses, MCHD employee annual increase will be 4%. Public health employee annual increases will be 3%. As approved by Department of State Health Services. TCRS employer match of 200% with a vesting of 5 years. Employer contribution rate remains 9.5%. Health insurance claims budget decreases due to the trend of reduced claims in FY 2026. Indigent healthcare expenses, unduplicated clients are projected to be 850. Healthcare inflation is projected at 8.5%. Major items in capital for the ambulance fleet, 8 Ram 5500 chassis replacements to be remounted the next year in 2028, and 8 14-foot module replacements for next year. The Porter Tower construction phase 2, Station 13 Willis build out and remodel, Station 15 Bay expansion in Central Conroe, Station 24 the branch crossing station, payment 3 of 3, and Station 30 Bay expansion in East County. If you turn to the next page, page 10 is the budget summary. And so we can there compare the fiscal year 2027 budget to the 2026 forecast. So tax revenue budgeted at $55,576,694. EMS net revenue, other revenue, all total up to be $96,047,419. Compared to forecast this year of $91,917,400, so growth of 4.5%. Expenses, payroll at $62,659,618, operating expenses $21,994,298, and indigent care of $3,506,395, capital expenditures of $11,412,142, so total expenditures of $99,572,453. That's down from the forecast of $107,781,499, down 7.6%. So this year's budget, 2027 budget, to be expenses greater than revenue by $3,525,034. Fund balance for the general fund. So starting with a fund balance of $42,833,239 for 2027, ending with a fund balance of $39,308,000. $205, so a decrease of $3.5 million. Next page is the budget summary combined, so you can see what it looks like with MCHD and public health on the page. So public health total revenue, $1,318,791. Total expenses, $1,576,360. So deficit, $257,569. So if total combined, the two funds, negative $3,782,603. The next page, tax rate scenarios. So at the top, that top box, you can see our no new revenue rate. This year was 4.58 cents per hundred, and the voter approval rate was 5.03 cents per hundred. The next box, you can see what we budgeted in 2026, and then in the highlighted blue area represents the proposed tax budget. Tax rate, 4.79 cents per hundred, generating budgeted tax revenue of $55,576,694. This year, one one-hundredth of a penny per $100 valuation represents $116,027 of tax revenue. The next page, page 18, shows our tax rate and revenue trend since fiscal year 2014. You can see there in the middle, the dip represents in 2018, the homestead exemption being implemented. And then the subsequent year in fiscal year 19, tax rate decreased by 65 one-hundredths of a penny. And then in 2023, actually exceeding what had been budgeted in 2017. And so then trending on up where we are now. At the bottom, the blue bars show the tax rate. So as while the tax revenue was increasing, you see the blue bars, tax rate decreasing over the years. Page 16, just a graphical demonstration of the sources of revenue. So at the top is the hospital district. So property taxes representing 57.9% of total revenue, EMS revenue 33%, and other 9.1%. And then for public health, this year, the public county funding is the number one funding at 45.5%. Grants at 44%, and then other at 10.5%. On page 18, in the next few pages, there are department descriptions. And so you can see in detail what each department does, what they do here. And then on page 22, the funded activities by grants. So you can see the various grants that public health has. The expenses that are covered, and the activities that are allowed under the grant. Page 26, the public health funding timeline is just another graphical presentation showing the grant years and funding years don't necessarily match up with our fiscal years. And so you can see that second one, RLS, LPHS, ends in August. CRI number 203 ends in June, and SUR number 204 ends at the end of August. And so these are grants. We talked about the deficit and how we don't budget for grant revenue until grants are awarded. And so this will change over time as grants become available and are awarded. The next page shows budgeted employee headcount by department. So subtotal for the administrative and support staff is an increase of 27 compared to fiscal year 26. So that increase is 2. Alarm and EMS staff is a decrease of 8. And so net overall for MCHD is a reduction of 6 in terms of budgeted headcount. Below that in public health, there is no change in the headcount for public health. So overall, between the two, is a decrease of 6. Page 29. So this shows kind of how the public health budget for indigent care is arrived at. And so this year's cost per client for uncompensated care is $2,508. We're budgeting 850 unduplicated patients next year and considering 8.5% healthcare inflation. And so that arrives at $2,313,003 for uncompensated care costs next year. And the next page goes through that same exercise for specialty care. So with $1,294 this year, same 8.5%, same 850 patients yields $1,193,392. On page 31, just goes through by department and details out all of the capital expenses which are proposed. On page 34 is a project listing which includes all of those capital expenditures plus any related operating expenses to kind of give you a total picture of what those projects would be. Just on the next page is the annual budget history. And so you can see from fiscal year 23 through fiscal year 27, the trend of each line item. Just notice that in fiscal year 26, it's incomplete. It's still comparing budget rather than the actual of the previous years. Page 38, we get that same view for public health. So you can see what that trend looks like over time. And then finally on page 40, that starts about 65 pages of detailed budgets for each department. Won't go through those in detail at this point, but just let you know that those are the resources available within the budget for both you and the public. And with that, I'd like to open it up to discussion.
I have a quick question. The total expenditures you talked about in the budget overview, what was that number again?
Sorry, I'm getting there. So total expenditure is $99,572,453.
Okay. Does that number include the money budgeted to handle the election?
Yes, and so there have been, since we last met, we have not made any changes. And so I think that didn't become official, I believe, until yesterday. So we just didn't have time to reflect that in the book.
Okay.
We do have a spreadsheet running to, you know, any types of changes that we need to make so that we can keep track of them, make sure that they get in there.
Yeah.
So we're presenting the board a budget tonight, and then we're going to present you a budget in a couple weeks to approve. We'll show any differences so that you can see specifically.
So the next time we discuss this, that 1.4 million or whatever it was
will not be in there.
Okay.
Correct. I didn't mean to talk over you. Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. Anybody have any questions?
Thank you.
So whatever we do tonight, it's not going to be final anyway.
I agree.
Right.
So
no, I don't think we have any other questions at this time.
Okay. I know you don't have questions, and it's your prerogative, but I would like to get as close as we can to what y'all want it to look like if we could, so that we can present you a good budget to approve the next time we meet.
Okay.
So
Bob, you had one issue you wanted to talk about.
Not totally an issue, but our last meeting, we had a hard time coming up and putting this together to be able to bring this forward, even with the amounts today that we approved, correct? We had three different votes that we took.
Oh, I see what you're talking about,
yeah.
Yes.
And the only reason that it got approved was to discuss it. And we may be at the same place today. I don't want to see a tax rate increase at all. And I'm still personally sticking with the no new rate. I haven't been convinced otherwise, but.
Understand.
So I don't know where we're going to go from here. Do you know how much we actually, I mean, our last budget we talked about last year, we were going to end up in the hole. I don't believe we actually did we?
So we are in the cycle at this point where each month we're negative to budget. Last month was $6 million. I think in July, if the finalized income statement is going to show about negative $4.5 million, so we'll still see August and September decreasing. And so we'll be, I believe we'll be negative. We will not be as negative as shown on that budget. But it's I get a hard time for this. It's timing. I can't predict on a given day exactly where we're going to be. And right. So I know that we're probably going to move about $6 million worth of capital that was supposed to, projects that were supposed to be completed this year, will have to slide into next year through open purchase orders and that budget amendment process that we'll do at that first meeting next year. And so it's timing, and it's the best analogy I have is the Super Bowl. And if I could tell you what the score was going to be exactly at the end of the third quarter, I could tell you which square to pick at the party. But there's timing and things slide, and so it's just the best I can do. I know that I'm telling you that unassigned fund balance is going to be plus or minus 3 months at the end of next year. It's timing. It could be a little more. It could be, depending on if we got everything done, it's going to be less. But our history is that we haven't gotten everything done, and so that will likely slide a little bit. But the truth is we are reducing that fund balance. And as I explained the last time, as expenses increase each year, just the math itself says that the months on hand are going down.
Well, and as history shows us, every year we get more people in here and the taxes increase, not by rate, but by the amount of people that are here and with the appraisals that take place. So we're continuing to grow, and we're continuing to grow money into the county.
So, yes, sir.
I don't want to see us.
Yes, sir. We have
increasing the taxes.
Benefited in terms of that. And would you mind pulling up that historical graph? That's the one. Yes. And this demonstrates your point perfectly, Mr. Bagley, that reduced tax rate while revenue increases. And I won't deny that. And last year when the board elected to do the no new revenue rate, it made me go back and look at what's happened to tax valuation. I think I did 4 or 5 years. And based on the tax valuation, what would the no new revenue rate look like? And I don't have that in front of me, but I want to say it was 7%, give or take. Okay, so a reasonable number to have to work with when looking at population growth and inflation. This year, we didn't see that same historical growth that we saw, that we've been seeing in the valuation. You know, we saw population growth increase, but the valuation did not continue to grow at the same pace that we've been seeing. In fact, Tammy's numbers were showing a little over 2% on the given day that she ran the reports. And so
part of that's due to the fact that the houses were overappraised. Even with the market today, they're selling less than what the appraisal value is from.
So what that, and I'm not going to debate that particular talking point. What I will say is that our valuation from last year, what was called the certified valuation. And all that is this is the hour, minute, day that we poked our flag that this is a valuation. It constantly changes. Every transaction that runs through the tax assessor's office, it changes. And this year, rather than seeing that decrease because houses were over valued or whatever, that valuation for last year has increased. And so, and I could show that just by the fact that this morning, I check every day in terms of what are our tax collections, how does that compare to what we budgeted for the year, and I've got it.
Because I knew I'd pick this number.
The taxable value went up 5.24% this year, which is lower than
anyway, 178, we're a couple hundred thousand dollars ahead of total budget this year, so I don't have to do the precise number, but we're going to exceed we've already exceeded our budget this year, and the only way we can do that is if valuations are increasing. And that's that valuation increase through, I guess, my July 31st number is the last one I have. That's squeezing the flag that they put down for this year. And so that difference just isn't very much.
I'd like to make a... I'd like to make a quick comment.
Yes, sir.
Since you would like a little bit more information, it's not really a question, but if you go back to that graph of the rising tax revenue.
Yes, sir.
I just want to point out something that every year since you did the exemption.
Yes.
The amount of revenue. The county has been growing, so it's been continuing to grow up, and the tax rate has gone down. In my mind, we still grew this year. We didn't grow as much as we projected, okay, but we did grow. So it's I'm just going to be honest with you. From my point of view, I'm not speaking for the board, but from my point of view, it's going to be very difficult for me to vote for a tax rate that goes up. We have, you know, we're going back to 2014, and the tax rate goes down every single year, even during the time period when you guys implemented the exemptions, the tax rate went down. This is the only year on that blue chart where the rate goes up, and it's going to be hard for me, I'm talking for myself here, to vote for a tax rate that's going to go up.
And so I'll be honest with you, too. I put in and discussed it with others, but I'll claim responsibility for it. The 4.79, just so we could have this discussion. I'm not married to 4.79, but I want to go to the grave with 4.73 and stay in the same. I don't see us being able to afford to reduce the rate, not with the way the county is growing. The amount it costs to provide the equipment, the services that we do, MCHD is a jewel. This is a world-class EMS system. At a tax rate currently of 4.73 cents per hundred, which is the lowest in the county. So I feel like, and I know that a self-recommendation is no commendation. I was taught that pretty early. But I feel like we do a pretty good job of providing value to the county. And so I don't get a vote, but I do feel adamantly that I want us to be able to not have to reduce services in the future. I want us to be able to continue to be the organization that we are, because these people and the people before us have worked really hard to get here. And I'm really, really proud of what we provide to the county.
Well, so am I.
I think the whole board is.
Yeah, there's no doubt that you guys have done a wonderful job, and we want to be able to fund the organization so the organization can continue to do a wonderful job. As a matter of fact, we had a big debate about making sure that the employees got a boost in their salaries this last year. So
yes, sir.
I don't feel like this board is, we're taking a negative attitude towards the district and the things that everybody's doing. But I do, on the other hand, part of what we're elected to do is to look out for the taxpayers too. And I understand every year we have this discussion that for any individual taxpayer, the average amount is not a lot. But we have almost 800,000 people in the county now. Not all of them are property owners, but we have well over 500, 600,000 property owners. And that $7, when you cast it across the whole county, it adds up to serious money. And but we're having this discussion among ourselves, not as a board, but we talk about it. And I'm just sharing with you my thought process. I'm not speaking for any individual up here, but going up in the tax rate, because we're still one of the fastest growing counties in the United States.
Yes, sir.
And our tax base is growing. And so it's hard for me to justify raising the tax rate.
Absolutely.
In an environment where we're in the top 10 of the fastest growing counties. We're growing so fast we can't even keep track of where all the properties are. I served on the appraisal district.
Yes, sir.
And they're having trouble keeping track of where all of the properties being built are.
Yes, sir.
So anyway, I apologize. I'm not trying to go into a rant or anything, but I appreciate what you said. I agree with you that the organization's doing a wonderful job. The employees are doing a wonderful job. But we're trying to come up with a balance between what the taxpayers are asking us to do and what you guys are asking us to do.
Yes, sir.
That's the way I think.
And I want to apologize for the emotional plea.
That's okay.
I want to be able to...
We're glad you're passionate, absolutely.
I want to be able to provide you with data so that you can make good decisions. And so just from a financial stance, just the fact that expenses are greater than revenue, we've budgeted that way for a long time. To your point, timing, it takes us a while to kind of like the geese, right? We're circling down onto the field. But I get worried because in terms of our tax base, and yes, it's growing, but at the state level, they're making efforts to reduce what we can do with that base. A few years ago, they, for cities and counties, they reduced that voter approval rate down from 8%. I think it's 3%. Don't quote me, but it's much lower than 8%. They're talking about doing that again next year down to 2%. And it may not happen, but it's been mentioned that next time we may not escape being included in something like that. And so let's have our eyes wide open to the fact that we don't control everything. The growth has allowed us to do that, but it may not in the future. We may not be able to hold revenue or increase revenue as we would like. And I just don't want to be, I know I'm terrible with the analogies, but in that plane and we're going to, and gravity gets to the point where we can't pull out of it. And with that, I'll be quiet.
I don't see us crashing. We've been up to, if I'm not mistaken, well over the amount, like 6 months or 9 months of reserve in the past, and we've gotten it down to three-ish. That's not law. That's the board's decision to do that. Since I've been on the board, and even the time that I wasn't, we never dipped into those funds. We went through Harvey. We went through COVID. We went through Barrow. We've gone through everything in this county that I can think of. We haven't had an earthquake, but we have not tapped those funds. We have survived because there's other outlets for us to get the money from. So I am fine if we went down to 2.5, 2.5 months. We've survived without it at this time. At this time in the nation, and even in our county, even though we're kind of in a bubble in Montgomery County, people are hurting for money. I don't want to put more burden on them by increasing their taxes at this time. If we have to change things next year, I'm okay with that. This organization has done so well over the years of taking care of taxpayers' money and providing the best services in the nation, and I want us to continue to do that. And I still think we will with what we have.
If I can say something?
I guess
I don't want to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So I was one of the ones that voted for looking at 0.0479.
Yes, ma'am.
I felt like I personally needed to do due diligence, and I wanted to review the numbers to make sure that I was fully taking into account all of the information that was available.
Yes, ma'am.
And I also feel like the information that was provided by Tammy McRae was really insightful, because she brought up some things in her presentation. In particular, from my perspective, when she was talking about the number of homes that are not on the rolls and how much back taxes were available, and what that signals to me is our unassigned fund balance is going to go up. And now she did say, if I remember correctly, that MCAD was going to try and put 5,300 properties back on the roll by the end of the year. And I took that as December, not FY. I'm not clear on that.
I would take it as December as well, and just listening to her.
Okay.
And as somebody who's on the appraisal board, I would take it with a grain of salt, okay? I'm just being honest about it. So I think most of it will, the older stuff will be brought on. There's no question. The newer stuff may not get there, but they'll get there first quarter of the next year.
So that will, to Bob's point, that will increase our unassigned fund balance, and I don't have the rate right in front of me at this moment. Can you illuminate that for us again?
What exactly?
How much on hand for the unassigned fund balance we have currently, and then what the projection could potentially be. I know she did give us a number.
Can you go to June for me? I just want to see a number. I'm not going to go through the whole thing with them. Can you go down the page for me, please? So right now, at the end of July, we're at 5.7 months. But as I said, August and September, we're going to reduce that. Maybe 5 million each month, which will be close to between 1.5 and 2 months less. So we're going to go down, 4.2, 4.5 is what I'm expecting right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
When I requested the last 6 years of the unassigned fund balances.
Yes, sir.
And for 2025, at the end, you said we were at 4.9. So the number you just quoted is at the end of 2026.
Yes,
sir.
Is that
correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And so, oh, finish your question. Looked like you had another thought.
So what was that number again? I apologize.
The one I just provided was 4.7.
4.7.
At 7/31/26.
Okay. So if you take a look at the trend here, going back to COVID, 5.7, 6.2, 6.0, 6.3, 5.8, 4.9, and you said 4.7?
4.7 at the end of July, but take off 1.5 to 2 more months before the end of the year. Let's call it 1.5, because we're still going to be negative in August and be negative in September to get to the same point of September 30 that these numbers represent. So just to be apples and apples.
And that was July. And
so July, it's 4.7 months.
These
yes, sir.
These are through September 30th, right?
That's correct. I did them by fiscal year.
Yeah, okay. All righty.
July's 4.7. What is he forecasting December to be?
In
4.7 at September, correct?
Or 4.7 is at the end of July. Okay. And then subtract, on a guess, another 1.5 months from that. So 4.7, 1.5, was it 3.2? I mean, we're going down. That's an estimate. Again, I'd like to be able to pick that football square.
Okay. Yeah, you'd have us on your team.
Yes, sir.
And then I guess my last just comment.
Yes, ma'am.
Is so just looking back at July, at the financial dashboard, it looked like in terms of targets for our 9 months, we're looking at 75%. It was really EMS net revenue, which was at 70%, 0.4% year-to-date annual budget.
Right.
And that's because what my understanding is the rate limiting factor is personnel. Which is why on payroll it's less.
So, yeah, we're looking at financials for June is what she's quoting. That's the most recent she has is June.
Wasn't personnel.
Right, but I think that's for the 9 months ending.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. And so what I'm going to say about EMS net revenue is there's a number of things affecting it. And number one, we were running fewer trips per day than we had budgeted.
But that wasn't personnel. That was just 911 calls reduced.
Correct. And then we do have in this year a kind of a change in the service mix from ALS to BLS. And so those two factors are reducing that EMS net revenue. I think that our trips per day bumped up in July. I think that, you know, we're improving in terms of our volume right now. I haven't gotten a chance to analyze our mix yet and seeing what we're doing for year to date in terms of mix, but volume was on an upward trend at the moment.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Real quickly, that number you have up there, that's of July, or is that of?
These are June numbers.
Those are what?
June.
Okay.
Those are the ones that I presented at the last board meeting.
Okay, yeah, so EMS net revenue through June is about 21.4.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And your average is about 2.5? Actual?
That was for the month.
I was for the month, okay.
Yes, sir. And then, as
As I turn the back to the audience and everything else, right? So can you just go back right where you were, please, Shannon? So as Ms. Peacock said, you know, we're 9 months through, and so kind of our little gauge we're going against is 75%. And so net revenue through that 9 months, we're comparing that 70% to 75% that says we're a little bit less than where we want to be, where we planned to be.
I have a question. Are we increasing the fleet?
The fleet size?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
So we're eliminating 8 EMS positions and we're increasing the fleet.
Yes.
So how are we going to man? I mean, we have a hard time keeping enough people on staff anyway. How are we right. going to get rid of 8 people, bring on more vehicles, and then not have enough people to man them?
Yeah, there. It's not physically getting rid of 8 people. When you look at shift bid, we have different positions that have been vacant that we've been unable to fill. So when you look at the headcount budget, there'll be a reduction in the in-charge position, but an increase in the EMT. As we change our model next year, we're going to have less in-charges, but more attendant paramedics and more EMTs.
That's only because we'll have more BLS trucks on the road.
We're going to transition to ALS trucks, but yes, there'll be less in charges, more attendant paramedics, and more EMTs. Yes, so it's more of a deployment change than it is a reduction in personnel.
We'll have probably less MICUs at some point next year.
Is that a good?
But we'll have more ALS trucks.
Is that a good thing?
We think it's a more efficient model to meet the demands of the county. Not every ambulance and every patient requires 2 paramedics, so some of our trucks have 2 paramedics. Well, sometimes somebody's eye pain or ear pain can be handled by 2 EMTs or a new paramedic and an EMT. So we're just trying to spread our resources out to meet the demands of the call volume that we're seeing.
But all of our trucks are still out in their normal area, and if we need the MICU? If we need it in East County and they're in West County, and that's the only one we've got, then what? Other than getting a chief, and we're having problems getting chiefs showing up for work too, right?
No.
Okay.
We will be able to manage, because when we do the deployment, we will have chiefs. We'll also have squads that will be available. That could make a truck a MICU truck if we needed them. We'll transition this program slowly and carefully, and we won't miss the right people at the right place. We have a lot of calls every day that are less than severe problems. We get called for a lot of 911 calls that. You know, somebody has belly pain or their stomach is upset or that sort of thing. So we can take care of those calls with not 2 paramedics and in charge and an attendant paramedic. So we're trying to set the system up so that we best send the truck for the call that we get.
Is this all based on statistics and studies?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So when we every January we do something called a dispatch determinant review. So we're able to see how many calls we go on where we provide life-saving interventions, how many calls require lights and sirens, how many calls don't require lights and sirens, time-sensitive emergencies, and we look at all of that information and we adjust our system, like tweak the dials accordingly to meet the trend and the demand. It's a good question. Yes, ma'am. And how long it took them to get there? What treatment did they provide when they got on scene? We look at all of that annually. Yes, ma'am.
Any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
So I mentioned that we have a spreadsheet. To document changes between what you're looking at right now and what you look at in terms of final approval for expenses. And so I think right now we have 2 line items on it, one being $1.4 million for the election. And the other, we received an updated budget for MCAD, and at the back of their budget, they show how much they expect to allocate in terms of expense to each taxing unit. And so ours is going down by $25,000, and so we'll reflect that. Do you have any other proposed changes at this time that we can go on and make sure that we have included for you? Okay.
Good. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
I would like to mention a potential change. In looking at the July financials, HCAP specialty care is actually coming in higher right now than the whole next year's budget, so we're going to take a deep dive with that over next couple of weeks so that we can bring you a right size number there. So you may see the HCAP specialty care budget be increased for the budget year based on where we stand today.
Yeah, on their budget, one of the things that we talked about during the last meeting, if I'm not mistaken, was going to the county and saying, listen, prices are increasing, costs are increasing, and you're not increasing the funding that you're giving.
That funding is not for the HCAP program. That's for public health only.
I'm sorry.
All right.
We'll look at the public health cost as we go through the next 6 months, and if necessary, we'll come to the county next year and ask for more money if we need it. I don't want to ask for more money from the county until we actually need it, because we've just started getting it.
Right.
And we've also got some interest income coming off the money that we have. So I think to be a good partner with them, when we go ask for it, they should give it to us, because we've proven that we need it. And I'll also remind you, we have a 120-day double gun to the head, so that we can always give it back to them if they're not going to fund us when we actually need it.
Yeah, just a thought. Thanks.
And the HCAP is, I believe you and I talked about earlier, that has to do with, like, tuberculosis cases and stuff like that?
No, ma'am. The health care assistance program is our indigent health care program that mimics the state indigent care program. That's part of the MCHD. The public health department does the TB, STDs, at vaccines and epidemiology and preparedness, and they are a separate fund, Fund 22, and they're the ones that receive the grants and the county funding.
So do we have any idea of what's causing the HCAP?
Those are just indigent people who are sick. Most of them are chronically sick. So people that you see in the hospital that are chronically sick and don't have money, those are candidates for HCAP. I think that HCAP has increased. Also, you'll note our EMS trip volume has increased over the last month pretty significantly. I don't know if this is a bump or just another rise in acuity, but we want to take a harder look at that because it's just changing.
So we've had a number of patients also who have maxed out over the last couple of months, so that's showing there. As we get to the end of the year, that happens. And so that 60,000 or 30 days in the hospital, there's been 13 occurrences so far this year of that happening. So that increases those dollars as well.
So we've had that 60,000 for quite a while.
Yes, sir.
Do we need to look at that and increasing it? Or mandated by state to do that?
No, we're not mandated by the state to do that. That was a board decision to be at 60,000. And out of 800 patients, having only 13 reached that cap, I think we're still in a safe space with that. If we start seeing more reaching that or exceeding that cap, you know, which they exceeded if they reach it, then that's sometime we might need to talk about it. But I think we're very safe where we are right now.
That's just 13 this year?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, because I know we've had them in the past, too.
Yeah, so we average between 12 and 15 a year that max out.
Okay.
And that's consistent back to 2022.
From a state standpoint, we're required to take care of everybody who's at or below the 21% poverty income level. We take care of 150. We also have a max of $30,000. We have a max of $60,000. We also do the 1115 waiver, which gives the hospitals a good deal and gives us a very good deal because that increases the pay about 2.4 times that we pay the hospitals. And then the final thing is we are very aggressive with case management, and that's where we get the most drive for the least amount of money, and patients get in and out of the hospital and are cared for better. Community paramedicine program also does a lot there because they basically take care of patients in the home and coordinate that care. So all that together makes the system very efficient, and we are, in terms of the state, we're being about twice or more gracious than other counties have to be.
All right, thank you. I think we're moving on to item number five. Consider and make recommendations on potential revisions to ACC 05-101 district purchasing policy.
Can you pull that up, Shannon? Yeah, just that last page. So this is in specific regard to the salvage and surplus tonight. I know as we have talked about the house at on Siemens that we had purchased and how we go about getting rid of that, it came to light. It's something we knew that the board had decided how we do our procedures and set policy. But it was mentioned that since we don't have to follow, there's no legislation for us with regard to how we do that, that we might be able to do that in a more efficient way. And so this is, as it currently stands, what we do. Upon approval by the board, we can dispose of it through public auction, trade-in, sealed bids, distribution of unsalvageable or donation to local charity groups. It's kind of opened this up to you guys in terms of what you had in mind, in terms of the efficiencies, and so we can make an attempt to come back with policy that would be better in line with what you believe that we should be doing.
Well, I'm just speaking for myself here real quickly. I spent most of my time focusing in on our first item of the evening, and I didn't put any effort into discussing this or having thoughts about it. So I would prefer to have more time to think about this and discuss it with folks and move on it next month.
Okay. Later. Yes, sir.
And I'll just make a note that our general counsel has done a deep dive into this, and so I think he's right behind me, but he's available, I think, to give you information on local government. We looked at doing things the way the county does it and the way cities do it, and in the past, we followed that because they had a process, and we knew that was okay. We don't have to follow those processes. We can do something different if you wish. So, Art is very familiar with this.
All right, very good.
So before you start, Art, one of the things that we brought up initially was to try to find somebody else to buy it so it could be moved off of the property, and I'm still okay with that.
That was done it went out for sealed bid and we received no bids. It was advertised, it was sent to companies that moved them, and we received no response, period.
I didn't know that, sorry. What are we looking at time-wise for having to have it removed so that we can build the new structure?
The new fiscal budget approving that be built. That's when we'll be able to get started. And so if it's not going to be able to removed, we'll have to destroy it, tear it down, which will cost us money.
Yeah.
I don't know, and I'm just not said this to anybody else in the room, but it might be in interest of the district to send out to the companies that do pick up houses and move them a very low price that they could get it at, or free for takeaway. Price, because that'll still save us the $16,000 to $20,000 of tearing it down. So, as y'all are thinking about options, that might be one to consider.
Okay. It's a good good plan. If we can get them to pick up the house and take it away for less than it would cost for us to destroy it, then we should go that direction.
Yeah, it'd probably be 10 to 15,000 to move it, I imagine.
Yeah, it depends on whether they think any part of it's salvageable, or maybe they could do it for free if they think there's.
Well, that's what I was saying. You can have the house for free if you come get it and take it away. So not paying them to take it away. No. So it's kind of a this for that.
One slight kink in this plan is that part of the house can be hauled away. There's another couple of rooms that are onto a slab. They cannot. So we'll still need to destroy that part of the house.
Yeah, okay.
All righty.
You're going to let Art talk.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what Art has to say about it.
Yeah, since you're here.
Well, I can
provide okay, Chairman?
A comment for the next meeting.
Your mic's not on.
The email.
Can't hear you. Is the mic on?
I have a lengthy email that I wrote, and I can turn that into a quick memo to educate you for the next meeting, because it does have legal analysis as to why we're even doing this.
Okay.
That'd be great. Thank you.
All righty. Come to the end of our agenda. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Mr. Bagley moves. Do we have a second?
Second.
And Kelly moves. We all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?